Thank you for the vote of confidence. Barry, go ahead.
This is Barry. Do we have any questions on the phone, or is anybody on the phone?
I have no participants on the line.
Going once, so should this be like kind of, you know, the historically shortest working group meeting ever? Does anybody want to know more about the recommendations? I mean, any questions about the weather? Okay, I'm going to just start picking on people.
I'll actually ask a quick question around. This is PDP 205. Can you talk about what the plans are around that? I'm actually just not familiar with. I know there was an A and B, and like how that works and what the spread is around that.
At this point, I think I'll call on Marika to address that, since she knows this better than I do.
So this is Marika. So I think the council decided initially that these PDPs would be taken sequentially. So we finish A, then started B. When B is finished, we start C. But I do believe has been some discussion in the working group whether it might make sense, as you know, many of the people that are involved in B were also involved in A, to maybe see if the rest of the issues can all be taken together in one really big PDP. I don't know if that's a recommendation the working group is going to make, but I know there has been some discussion, and I don't know if any of the other members want to comment on that, whether they think that is a recommendation they're going to make to the council.
So they're split by issue set, basically?
Yes.
Right now.
Yes, the initial grouping that was made, I think they grouped them together on issues related, but also on the perceived sense of difficulty or issues that were more difficult to resolve, I think, are at the end of the queue.
Right.
So they thought the ones that were easy and might take less time were up at the front, but I think we've still, you know, taken quite some time on going through them because they're complicated issues, many different angles that need to be covered. You know, we've had input from some technical experts to talk about, you know, how EPP works, what is possible, what isn't. Some input as well from ICANN compliance and legal on certain issues. So I think, you know, we're trying to see, because many of the issues are interlinked in some way, because they all deal with the transfer policy, whether maybe C, D, and E need to be taken together in some shape or form.
So, Adam, we hope that you will be volunteering to help out with the any future working groups in this area.
It could happen.
I mean, ultimately, anybody who wants to get involved in any of these working groups is free to do so. There is no restriction. So if you want to get involved, you know, just next time a working group opens up, feel free to volunteer. I know that's not aimed just at you, Adam.
While I'm here, I may as well ask another question. Can you talk a bit about where the requirement around the emergency action channel came from, referring to SAC 007 here, and what the sort of outline was around that got the PDP to start thinking about it, or the working group, sorry?
Sure. From the conversations that we had between the various people within this working group, one of the salient issues was that, let's say, if a domain is being transferred from GoDaddy to TwoCows to Network Solutions, you know, there are lines of communication between those companies. So, you know, somebody in Network Solutions can pick up the phone and ring TwoCows, or somebody in TwoCows can ring GoDaddy, or vice versa. That's not an issue. The issue arises where the registrar who's receiving the domain name could be less than responsive. I think, Mikey, you were involved with some of this, so you might want to mention a couple of things.
So, Adam, are you asking the history of the SAC 77 stuff?
Basically, yeah.
Okay. SAC-77 is 6 years old, so I ranted at the meeting this weekend saying, you know, 6 years is kind of a long time to wait for action on this. And basically what the goal of this is, SAC was saying, we need to be able to respond quickly to a situation that's causing a lot of harm, primarily a hijacking, but there are some others. But we don't want to put registries and registrars in the role of adjudicator of a dispute. So the thought was, set up an emergency action channel so that where those lines of communication don't already exist, get them to exist, because registries and registrars have a lot of tools available to them to resolve these disputes once they're communicating. And so SAC-77 sort of laid that out and called for an emergency action channel. And essentially we stole their stuff. So, you know, if you want the chapter and verse on the whole thing, I'm sure we've got a link in the report to that, but it's also on the SAC site, and it's basically like a three-paragraph thing. And you know, a lot of the issues that we've been talking about on the working group were highlighted in that. You know, there's a question of, you know, doing it in such a way that it can't be gamed. Clearly there's a gaming component that this could get pretty drastic. And our first try at it didn't work out. I mean, we took a run at it the last time through and drew a lot of criticism from the community, went back to work. And, you know, we've narrowed the focus, and we think we've got it right this time, but we'd really like people. That's why we're asking all these questions. Take a look, take a hard look at what we've got. Help us get it right. That's really what we're after.
I mean, the thing I keep saying is if people like what we've got, please, you know, even submit a one-line comment just saying, yeah, we like this. Because, unfortunately, it's very easy for the vocal critic to drive the policy development. Because, ultimately, we have to go based on what we're hearing from the community. And if all we're hearing are the vocal critics, then, you know, they'll end up with a disproportional influence. Not that there's anything wrong with criticism, but just at the same, you know, if it's actually okay for you and you can think, okay, that makes sense, just, you know, let us know. Mikey?
Let me follow up with one other thing. The sort of underlying goal, and I don't know if we've said that because I'm still kind of jet-lagged, so if I'm repeating something, it's short anyway. So, the goal is where there's a situation where harm is being created, let's put it back the way it was quickly, and then allow time for an orderly dispute resolution process to unfold, figure out the real conclusion. But in some cases, the harm of the, especially in the case of a hijacking, is pretty dramatic. And right now, they're, again, as McKaylee pointed out, if it's between the major registrars, those kinds of situations get resolved really quickly. The bad guys don't use the major registrars on the way out. They use the Cayman Island ones. And so what we want to be able to do is pull it back quick and then, in an orderly way, using all the tools that are already there, figure out what's really the right thing to do.
So any other questions or comments? There's loads of you sitting around in this room. There's space up at the table if you want to come up, if you want to make some kind of comment, anything. No takers. Oh, I could pick on people, all right. Oh, there's somebody. Okay, good. And please introduce yourself for the scribes. Oh, well, sorry, transcript, rather. Beg your pardon.
Hi, I'm Jordan Buchanan, and I'm just asking questions on behalf of me. So it seems like if there's some ambiguity about this, you know, emergency channel process, and we think that there's a process that already works out pretty well amongst the major, you know, the big name registrars and registries, is it possible to model that, you know, to formalize that relationship today and say, here's something that works, right, and we'll write down what we do today and use that as the model for whatever the ongoing, you know, the thing that then you're going to require everyone to get engaged in looks like? I mean, that seems like a way to resolve the ambiguity about what that process looks like.
This is Mikey O'Connor. That's essentially what we tried to do the first time around, And so there was a very small group of us. Me, the innocent elderly geek, and then a bunch of really smart registry and registrar folks. And basically what, as you start trying to document all the different ways that these things happen today, given all these different circumstances, it eventually collapses under its own weight. And we get into this problem of trying to place into policy what are really operational issues for the companies involved. And the trade-off is between the policy need and the needs of the organizations that are subject to those policies to be able to manage and run their businesses. And by making one size try and fit all, you wind up with a size that's incredibly complicated and very difficult to figure out. And that attempt was essentially what was in the first try. And it, you know, we got a lot of comment from the community, which we took back, and we took another run at it and eventually said, this is too hard. It's not possible to do this in a way that will work. And so we backed up and said, let's try something a bit simpler and a bit less defining that essentially drives the participants into the conversation but doesn't mandate what the conversation looks like once they're there, if that makes sense.
Thanks, McKelly. James Bladel, GoDaddy. I think Mikey captured it there at the very end, but I just wanted to chime in on this because I think you're uncovering a larger question, which is with respect to certain security concerns, how much of this do we want codified and built into a policy process, and how much of this do we want to leave to the discretion of the registrars? It also touches on a second issue, I think, that we encountered in this exercise, which is a scaling issue. What works for my company and Paul's company and some of the other registrars that are on the group may not work for a small one- or two-person operation that and then are we essentially closing them off by from this process and from these conversations with policy requirements? So I think that acknowledging that there are procedures out there to act quickly and to eliminate and reverse harm, and leaving the policy so that it's open so that it can address those things, I think is important.
Mikey?
One last point. Paul and I, James and I kind of remind each other of things that we've been talking about this for a year and a half. And so one of the other things that what James said reminded me of is that we have to be really careful that we don't write a cookbook for the bad guys, you know. And so there's security stuff here that we just as soon not publish to the world. And by diving into the actual processes by which these issues are sometimes handled and then codifying them in policy, we do two things. One, we advertise what those are, and the bad guys can then figure those out and circumvent them. And second, we freeze the registrars in place and make it hard for them to respond to the bad guys figuring that out. So there are a lot of sort of negative unintended consequences by writing this all out in a great deal of detail and putting it in policy, in addition to the stuff that we mentioned before.
So it just strikes me that, I mean, so I'm sympathetic to all these concerns. It seems like, as a result of this, it's unlikely that you're going to, you know, ever be able to take this first recommendation and you know, cause it to have meaningful action within the ICANN context. It's going to remain vague, and it's going to be hard to flesh out.
No, I think you're misunderstanding what we're actually talking about slightly. Is the thing is, at the moment, if we end up in a situation where an emergency contact is mandated and the emergency contact has to respond, then that is actually progress. Because at the moment, if there's an issue, let's say, involving a registrar, I'm probably going to get slaughtered now for picking on certain regions, but let's just say a registrar in a country that is...
That is not to be named.
That is not to be named. Okay, thank you. They could ignore all contacts from other registrars, from registries, from law enforcement, from whatever, and there is no way for ICANN or for anybody else to take any action because it's not covered within the policy. If you mandate that they simply have to actually start responding and engaging, then there is a way to actually move forward. But what Mikey's been trying to, and James have been talking about, is that you don't want it to be overly prescriptive because you can end up causing more, even more harm if you both write down exactly what you can and can't do, and also don't allow us the ability to change to deal with new threats. Go ahead, Mikey.
What's not on the slide, and it might be that we should have put it there, is one suggestion that we're considering is, let's say that a situation arises, a registrar contacts another registrar, they don't get a knack from the other end. The consequence of that would be very simple. The registrar that's attempting to contact would document that, manner to be determined, but you know, they would say, we didn't hear. That would be forwarded to the registry, and the registry would return the domain to its prior state. So there would actually be a very concrete, urgent return mechanism in that one really narrow case. What we don't want to do is solve all the other cases, but what this would do is take a huge bite out of the problem right now. It wouldn't solve all of them, but our informal over beer guesses is it might solve 50% to 70% of the problems, and that's a pretty big step in the right direction.
Yeah, I was going to suggest exactly this. Like, essentially, what you need, it seems like, is not relying on the general remedies in the ICANN contract, but have specific remedies for the cases where people fail to comply with this part of the contract.
Go ahead, Adam.
So has there been a lot of discussion so far within the working group around, you know, well, actually, first of all, have you guys started calling it the EAC yet? Or am I the first one to think about the fact that this is another awesome... that's right. IRTP PDP BEAC is what I'm specifically inquiring about right now. So regarding that EAC, has there been a lot of discussion within the working group around what that might look like, or is it just largely the notion that you guys think... Sorry, the working group thinks it's something that... you know, should come to fruition, but what it looks like or addresses other than very specific situations is something that's still TBD.
Go ahead, Mikey.
The IRTP...
And James. Okay. Now, Adam, we do appreciate the comedy. Thank you.
The
Mikey
IRTP
and then James.
The EAC is still TDB. The ESSEC report is sort of where we're at this point. What ESSEC says is it would be a good idea to have one of those. It would be a good idea to structure it in such a way that it can't be gamed, but leave that up to the participants to figure out. And I think that we will tend, I don't know, we haven't gotten this far in the conversation yet, we will tend to be not terribly prescriptive. We may lay out some general frameworks, but this is one of the sort of, I'll join McKaylee in the heartfelt plea for comments, because, you know, if there are some extremely practical things that we're missing, it would be great to hear about those, because our goal is to do this in a way that really works well for the parties that are under the gun, because this is a process that is urgent. It's hoped that this will all take place very quickly, and it's hoped that the conversations will actually start. We're hopeful that there never will be a need to invoke the repercussion. And so practical suggestions on how to do this are great. And, you know, from there we're wide open.
James, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, James speaking. And, you know, I think initially we look at the radar system. Is there something in there? I mean, I just looked up your contact, your emergency action contact, or what's standing in for that today. I think that, you know, really what we're saying is possibly designating one of the radar contacts to have a particular use, and then designating the requirement that it be used. Now, for those looking at me like, what does that mean? ICANN requires contact information from registries and registrars to be submitted and provides us all access to it. Think of it as a directory. It is not necessarily a public system, but it is a way for registrars, let's for example, in transfers, UDRPs, for ICANN to reach us and for us to reach each other. And I think that that's probably the channel that this will land in. It seems to make the most sense to me, but I'm open to other suggestions as well.
And just coming back again to the question about the comments, I mean, we received comments from one or two of the stakeholder groups in the past, but several other stakeholder groups didn't provide us with any feedback. Now, while we understand that many of them may be under various pressures and everything else, even a simple, you know, we don't have anything strong to say one way or the other would have been helpful.
And this is Marika, talking about the requirements of an EAC, I think the working group will need to take into account as well. If it is a tool that's going to be used to enforce on, you know, registrars that are not reactive, there need to be certain criteria or requirements in there that can be, you know, objectively audited and used as a tool. So working might want to consider, indeed, does there need to be a certain response time, for example, and, you know, defining what a response is so that if there is a breach, you know, our compliance team will actually have a way of going after those registrars that don't comply with it. But I think coming back to that, I think it would be really useful, as indeed is a tool that probably will mainly be used by registrars, if the registrar stakeholder group can think about you know, those questions that are in there and provide some input to the working group that then can also be considered by others that have an interest, of course, in making this tool work, because I think that would be really valuable that indeed we come up with a mechanism that really works, that can be enforced, and that really, you know, will facilitate and enhance the current situation.
Mikey?
It dawned on me that it might be useful to take on the example that was posed in the comments sort of head on. Let's imagine that there's a domain transaction that's gone bad, and the seller has seller's remorse. And the issue that was raised in the comments, very valid issue, was, well, this could be gamed to claw back a domain that in fact had been legitimately transferred, and that would be an inappropriate use. Okay, that's the scenario, and that's the concern. So let's describe what would happen under this proposal. Let's say that, I'll pick on James. GoDaddy's the losing registrar. And I'll pick on Paul. Network Solutions is the gaining registrar. And the seller, with seller's remorse, attempts to claw the name back. It wouldn't work. The reason it wouldn't work is because James and Paul's organizations would be in contact with each other, and because they would respond to the emergency action request, end of story, end of this policy. Nothing happens because they're in communication, period. The only time that this could be used is if the losing registrar, staying with James, the customer who has remorse, the seller who has remorse, says, no, wait, tries to claw the name back, and the gaining registrar doesn't respond to the request. So all the gaining registrar needs to do to circumvent this game is to respond. They don't have to do anything else except respond, except begin the conversation. So that's our hope, is that this will circumvent that use case, which is a very valid criticism and a very valid problem, and that would be that.
Mason?
So under the status of the current model, whatever it is, what is that window of time where a name could be clawed back? Do we know?
Under which model, sorry?
Sorry, the proposed one?
Yeah, the one that Mikey was just elaborating. It's undetermined at this time. We're looking for feedback on that. We're thinking urgent, so hours, two digits worth of hours, not months.
Yeah, because I'd seen 6 months before.
Yeah, it's none. That's all gone. All
right, good.
No, that's
hey,
wiped
hey,
away.
Just asking. That's why we're here.
Yeah, no, no, we're a little jumpy because we got a lot of very vigorous feedback on the last try.
Right. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Simonetta.
So, but to your point, where you have two registrars actually communicating with each other, and pardon my operational ignorance on this, but how much of that would be an automated process versus manual? I mean, wouldn't that be at the discretion of each registrar participating?
Once the conversation has started, once Registrar A has said, hello, Registrar B, and Registrar B says hello back, that's the end of this thing. From the initiation of the conversation on,
mm-hmm.
the mechanism as to how that conversation takes place, telephone, email,
okay.
is totally outside of the scope of
right, because what I guess if that becomes a highly automated system, then you could be exposed to other to unintended clawbacks, right? Because,
well,
because
the thing, Mason, is, I mean, if it becomes highly automated, then maybe that's wrong and that shouldn't be allowed. Because this is part of the thing that we haven't
right,
really
right. Wait, but this is the reason I'm bringing it up is to avoid that unintended consequence.
Well, but let's presume that it is automated and both ends are in the game. So the request is automated and the acknowledgement is automated. Well, as soon as the acknowledgement is received, this policy ends. The only case where this proposed policy would launch is if the echo didn't come back. And so if it was automated, that would in fact probably erase this from ever being invocable.
Okay, Simonetta, and then the gentleman down there whose name I didn't catch. Sorry.
Just to expand on Mikey's example of when that response comes back and you actually have a situation where the two parties disagree, one thing that we discussed in the working group is that this disagreement is not something we want the registrars to have the responsibility to resolve. It would then go into a normal dispute resolution process, and the existing policies would cover that piece of it.
So did you guys, or maybe the issues report before it even came to you, is there any data to substantiate how common each of two classes of problems are? One is the sort of, you know, hijacking, essentially, a domain name being moved away from an existing registrant invalidly. And similarly, vice versa, what's the incidence of people attempting to claw back names invalidly? Because it seems like you could use that to inform what the bias of this policy should be, right? Like, if it turns out that it's relatively common that, you know, names get moved away inappropriately, you know, get hijacked on the way out, at, you know, on like 100-to-1 ratio compared to how many people try to claw back names, then it's probably in the best interest to have the policy, you know, be biased towards being able to pull it back, even if a little bit of the gaming is going to happen in that direction, because you decrease the overall cost of the system.
James?
So I'm hearing two types of categories of data. And we did put out some different surveys, and of course we did put out some requests for comment. But in the first case, the first bit of data relative to the incidence of hijacking or attempted hijacking is something that registrars, as commercial entities, don't feel that they want to be discussing in public forums like ICANN. That is a security and internal, you know, type of a situation. We can tell you that it's something that we deal with on a daily basis. It's something that we're always mindful of could be attempted. And when it happens, of course, it's a PR nightmare for everyone involved, including ICANN. As far as the second one, maybe we can, you know, defer to Simonetta a little bit, but I don't know if there's any statistics in the domain name aftermarket industry, but it's also something that we're kind of proceeding on anecdotal evidence. We don't really necessarily have any quantifiable statistics on either of those.
Just speaking to the statistics question, I mean, we did get hard statistics from ICANN's compliance on the number of complaints that they had received and the types of complaints, what they were related to. But that doesn't actually cover the hijacking type scenario. I think part of that might also be because it's not something that a lot of people are going to be kind of overly happy about sharing the information. Simonetta, and then Vlad, after Simonetta.
My name is Vladimir Shadunov.
No, wait, sorry, Simonetta, you're after. Okay. Sorry.
So, in terms of numbers, we are not able to say, okay, case A is 100, case B is 5, or case A is 200, case B is 300, or whatever it is. What we do know is the issue was important enough to raise this question in the first place, so the issue is there. We also know that a number of registrars are not happy to share exactly what's going on within their operations. We know that this is something a lot of people deal with. We don't have good visibility into how many of which type situations are there. What we did do in addition to the initial question was we reached out to the aftermarket community and we asked people who own large portfolios, we asked domain brokers, we asked registrars that we partner with, what is your sense of this problem, and does this initial approach that we discussed while we were in Brussels, does this address the problem appropriately? And the feedback we got was, no, this is not a sufficient and a good approach to this problem, which is why we took it back into the working group and we came up with this idea to establish this emergency action channel and the ideas that we've brought to the table today. So there was a lot of discussion and a lot of trying to get to the numbers, but we don't have them, and we feel that what we currently propose is working regardless of what that ratio is.
Just to add one other thing on, in terms of the clawback, one of the reasons it's going to be really hard to come up with numbers is because we haven't created the situation in which the clawback could take place yet. You know, this would be a future.
I think that's true with regards to the proposed mechanism, but there's nothing stopping someone to have seller's remorse today and assert that they didn't actually authorize a transfer, right?
But the impact of our proposed tool is really hard to predict.
Right. But, so I guess I was just asking, like, in the real world, like, so I understand there's this theoretical concern about gaming. In the real world, does this ever actually happen? If not, it seems like biasing the policy, you know, like ignoring what seems like a relatively good remedy because there's some theoretical concern seems, you know, like a little bit, especially since we know that there's ongoing harm from hijacking, right? Like we established, yes, in fact, hijacking does occur. Not having a good mechanism to deal with that because there might be some other problem seems misguided.
Vlad.
Vladimir Shadrunov, I'm the director of policy for Telnik.tel registry. My question is about the basics. You're presenting the final report of the working group. It contains a number of recommendations, right? My question is this final report supposed to be some kind of a best practice guide for parties involved, or I see that you're requesting several issues reports, so I suppose there should be some next steps in your work. So basically, my question is how close you are to the completion of the work, and what will be the next steps?
Yeah, this is Marika. So if you look at the different recommendations, indeed, they're all of different kind of categories. Some of them are recommendations to change the policy, the existing IRT policy. So if those would get adopted, they go to the council and go to the board, and once adopted, go into implementation and come immediately effective. Other recommendations indeed for the issues report, those would be separate initiatives. It's not this working group. Some members might be the same, but that would be a new working group, a new initiative if the council decides to move forward with those. So those are new PDPs basically on the who is and the other items. On the emergency action channel, I think we're not clear yet whether that's going to be best practice recommendation or whether those might be, I think we're looking at new requirements under the IRTP. And again, I think the question is going to be whether the working group manages to work out all the details or whether further work is needed or a kind of test phase might be explored on seeing how it works. Because I think as well that's something the working group should assess as well once they go forward with the emergency action channel and define the different criteria, that there's also built in probably a kind of review period that you check after a certain amount of time, is this working? Is it working as intended? You know, are there certain issues that we haven't covered or haven't addressed and assess whether it indeed has made an improvement in the situation? Because I think it's important with any policy that is being proposed that there's a kind of evaluation at a certain point in time to make sure that it works as it was intended and whether there are no unintended consequences.
For example, Vlad, I mean, a couple of the issues, you know, it might be okay for the registrars who are participating to suggest a change, but other registrars may not like it, or some of the registry operators might get upset. So the thing is to make sure that whatever comes out the far end, whenever that end is something that's actually workable. So does anybody else have any comments, questions? Going once. Marika's wants to have the last word. Oh no. Dear.
Just want to make the last comment. Just encourage everyone, also the ones that make comments here, questions here, to submit those also to the public comment forum that will be open until the 31st of March. So we have it on the record. The way the working group has worked in previous public comment periods is that we list all the comments and try to define for each of the comments, you know, what the working group thinks of it and how it has impacted, you know, the final report. So please send in your comments and suggestions, and the working group will address them.
Go ahead, Adam.
So, sorry, entirely procedural. Is this the conclusion of that PDP then, and then on to C at some point?
Yes. Following review of the public comments, it's the objective for the working group to finalize a report and submit that to the GNSO Council for adoption. And as said, some recommendations will move up to the board for implementation. Some others might result in additional policy work, new policy development processes, and then the next step would be to move on to C or C, D, and E together.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Sure. I just one clarification to what Marika said. I'm really not trying to have the last word.
You should, for the record, this is Chuck Gomes from VeriSign.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I should know that to do that, shouldn't I? There is the possibility that once the council gets the recommendations that they could come back to the working group. I'm not suggesting that that would happen, but I just wanted to clarify that. So it might not be the end quite yet. Hopefully it is, because I think you've done a really good job. But just keep that in mind.
Thanks, Chuck. Mikey, you wanted to try and get a last word in? Okay, then. So anybody else want to throw their oar in, make a comment? Nothing? Okay, then. Oh, sorry. Hold on. We have one. Go ahead.
It's Chris Chaplow, just to get the last word. And thank McKelly for leading us through the last, 2 years? And hopefully on to the next D and F next group.
So are we nominating him for chair next up?
Thank you. Well, if we're going to thank people, we should really thank Marika. I'm working on the basis that if I can keep thanking Marika enough in public, she will turn a very interesting shade of red. I think you are. Yeah, you are. You're becoming immune, aren't you? Okay. I mean, ultimately, the working group's output is based on the work of all the members. So all I do is just try to stop you all from squabbling too much. Yes, exactly. It's cat herding. Okay, then. Does anybody have any other final comments? If not, I will draw this meeting to a close and thank all of you for coming. Thanks to those of you who've provided fresh input today. And please remember, the public comment period is open, Even if you don't feel overly strongly about writing an essay, a simple, yeah, that's really good, or, oh my God, that's terrible type comment would be helpful, because if we don't hear from you, we cannot know what you think. And thanks to everybody for attending. You can stop the recording and everything. Thanks.